And we start this second hour, and we start it by going to GolfChannel.com senior writer, who also happens to be the famous Rex number 7. You can follow him on Twitter at Rex Hoggard, GC, friend of the program. If there's a big event, he is at it, and we run him down, and this is no different. Rex, good to have you back. How are you, Rex?
I've got to be honest with you. Your audience, it's fascinating to me, because when you tweet that Rex is going to be on the show, like, everyone throws like 12 Rexes at you, like, oh, no, you should have this Rex on the show. And I had no idea. I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't know that guy was a Rex. Like, that's amazing to me.
Dude, is this just now becoming news to you? This has been a thing for a long, long time. They love and they love it.
I'm Rex 7. I own it. Like, there's still people in my neighborhood that call me Rex 7. It was just, man, like, this is a serious competition. I need to up my game.
Nah, dude, you're right where you need to be. Rex number 7. They cannot take that from you. That's exactly where you want to be. All right, so, and part of the reason for that is you're always in the right place at the right time with great content, and Rex number 7's got a good ring to it. One of the big stories, Rex number 7, with U.S. Open is always how the course is set up. So let me start right there. What do you make of the course setup? How did it look, and how did it play yesterday in your mind?
This one's pretty straightforward. Like, we talk every U.S. Open, and it's always different. We're talking about different venues. We're talking about places that we normally don't go. We're talking about Marriott's cool spots. This one we come to every year, and I think I have to hand it to the USGA. When they set this one up, they decide not to get too tricky. I mean, they're going to grow the rough up, and the green's going to be a little bit firmer and a little bit faster. But other than that, it's what we get in February at the Farmers Insurance Open, and I think there's a level of appreciation that the field has for this golf course that when they show up, they know exactly what they have to do. There's nothing tricky about it.
Rex Hoggard joining us. So, Rex, what about the fact that, as an example, this is the final year and the final U.S. Open with Mike Davis as CEO of the USGA. He's always in the news around the U.S. Open. So what do you think his legacy is going to be, especially when it comes to graduated rough and the punishment for players who get into the rough?
I wrote that legacy story earlier this week, and I always find it fascinating because you know this better than I do. We don't get to write our own story. Like, we don't get to control our own narrative more times than not, and certainly that's the case when it comes to Mike. And you brought up graduated rough. I think that was the one thing that everyone seemed to go back to, and it was also the idea of short par fours, which really hadn't been a thing, at least at U.S. Open venues in the past, and maybe going to a little bit different U.S. Open venues, thinking about Erin Hills and Chambers Bay. And the one thing that kept coming up is people talking about how he was such a forward thinker and he wanted to experiment. He wanted to do new things. And let's face it, the USGA is not an organization that likes to embrace new and different. This is all about tradition. So I think his legacy is going to be sort of trying to break the mold, trying to get this organization to look forward and embrace some things that maybe previous generations didn't. And when you look at what Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka and Roy McIlroy and the rest of these are doing for the game, I think Mike was completely on board with that.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. In fact, I want to follow you up on that and ask you about those guys in a minute, but I want to talk one more thing or mention one more thing about Davis. He was talking earlier this week about Tiger Woods and his win at Torrey in 2008. He said that he received a phone call from Mark Steinberg, Tiger's agent, before the tournament started. What did Steinberg tell him?
That was fascinating to me because we all know now in retrospect, I mean, that was, you know, it's such an iconic moment in sports and such an iconic moment for Tiger, but we didn't know how badly he was hurt at the time. It was after the fact. We knew that he was struggling with a knee injury. We didn't know his leg was broken and that he was dealing with all kinds of other physical issues, but Mark Steinberg, Tiger's agent, called Mike about a week before the championship, and they were considering this pairing that included world number 1, 2, and 3, which was Tiger, Phil Mickelson, and Adam Scott at the time. And Mark explained to him, look, he's broken his leg. We're not exactly sure if he's going to play. I wanted to give you a heads up. Please don't tell anyone. And to Mike's credit, he thought about it, and he knew that there was a chance that he was going to have to fill that spot in with God knows who else. And he went ahead and went with Tiger, and I think that's all kind of the lore of the week that, you know, we're still learning things all these years later about how bad it was and all of the things that Tiger went to. And it was such an iconic moment. They actually put a plaque by 18 this week, which I think is a really cool thing.
So I was going to say, Rex, I would imagine you've got a lot of thoughts and memories when you think about that week, but when you look back, what do you remember most about that win for Tiger?
We were talking about where we did some documentaries this week coming in, and the one thing that I keep going back to, well, two things. I worked for a weekly magazine at the time, and we had to close the magazine at a certain time on East Coast time on Monday. And when the final putt finally dropped, of course, it went to 19 holes on Monday with he and Rocco Mediate, I had about 15 minutes to file 2,000 words on Tiger Woods and try to put this onto perspective. And I was telling my son this story this morning that I don't know that I've ever felt this much stress in my entire life trying to figure this out, because there was no way to write it beforehand because you just didn't know how it was going to play out. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, on Sunday when Tiger makes the putt that we all know that he makes on the 72nd hole, Mike Davis, who of course we know wears blue blazers and is a very buttoned-up kind of guy, he and I are high-fiving next to the green. It was just a crazy moment. So those are the two things that come to mind.
That is wild. Rex Hoggard is joining us. All right, Rex, there was so much hype about Phil Mickelson coming into the tournament after winning the PGA Championship. He knows this course. He just turned 51. It would have been an amazing story, and would be still, if he were to finally win a U.S. Open and did it at Torrey Pines. But if we go back to earlier in the week, how much of a chance did you give him to win this tournament?
I didn't give him any chance, and it's the lowest form of lazy journalism. I completely own this. Like, I think I've written this column the last 3 or 4 years. And it's simply that I felt like Phil's time at the U.S. Open had passed. He simply didn't have the game. And I wrote the same column. I just kind of cut and paste and changed the location and the date and the ages and everything that goes into it. And this is despite the fact that he did what he did at the PGA Championship a few weeks ago, which was wildly impressive, and I think it's just going to be a defining moment in his career. But as many things as we can point to this particular story here at Torrey Pines, the home course, everything that goes into it, I can point to just as many things, if not more, of why it's not going to happen. I mean, Phil has not played this golf course well at all since Reese Jones redesigned it in 2001. He has a sort of a conflicted relationship with Torrey Pines after the North Course redesign, which he wanted to do, but some bureaucratic red tape kept him from doing. He's moving out of Southern California. He's moving to South Florida. So I think all of these things, I mean, his relationship with Torrey Pines is just complicated, is probably the best way to put it.
Right. So to that point, Rex, this thing about the home course, but the complicated relationship, is he really then the hometown guy that everybody likes to portray him as?
I don't think so, because he admitted it early in the week. He had to spend the last week or so just trying to learn the golf course. And this is after playing it all those years, but he just didn't really ever take the time to try to get that home course knowledge back. If I was going to pick a hometown guy, it'd be Xander Schauffele. I think he is the one guy that's probably played here more than Phil has in recent years and understands it better.
Is it his time? Where do you come out on Xander right now and the way he's playing?
I certainly think it's going to be his time eventually, and I don't know why this would be any different, because I don't think it's amazing to me. He's very soft-spoken, and he's a very underrated quote when it comes to the media, but I think there's a level of confidence that sort of doesn't recognize what he hasn't accomplished in his career. And by that, when he talks, you would think that he's won 4 or 5 majors. There is no lack of confidence when he talks about his ability to contend here or anywhere else. And he's done it time and time again. So, yeah, I can see him definitely holding the trophy.
I love this guy, frankly, myself. We're talking to Rex Hoggard. Rex, what about one more thought about Lefty? He had a tough first round yesterday, which included some distractions from cell phones in the gallery. Like, how did he look to you in the way he played and the way he carried himself out there?
I wrote that story about it, and it was specifically on 13, the par 5, which he bogeyed. There were some distractions. I was out there walking with him, and there were some cell phones that were going off, and we're sort of getting back into that as we welcome more and more fans back onto the golf course. But I think, to my point earlier, I think this was more of just a frustration about the golf course. He doesn't like what Breece Jones did to 13. He felt like he took a very good par 5 and made it probably a par 5 that's not nearly as interesting or as entertaining. I would say it's more about what Reese Jones and the redesign than it was the cell phone.
Rex Hoggard is joining us once again. So, Rex, you mentioned Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. In the lead-up to the U.S. Open, there was so much talk about the two of them being in the same group for the first two rounds. First off, how likely was it that the USGA was ever going to do something? And even if they had, how do you think those rounds would have gone? In other words, would there have been the fireworks that everybody was looking for?
It would have been fine. I mean, I think it's a little comical because you and I both know that two guys that don't get along working in the same office, how original. Like, that happens in every line of work that we know of, just not in sports. So I don't know that this was completely that interesting, other than the fact that those two just seemed to be a little bit more willing to talk about it, at least publicly, than maybe in other situations. And the USGA did consider pairing them together, and it kind of goes along the lines. You go back to 2008. I mean, pairing 1, 2, and 3 in the world at the time was a little forward-thinking, and the idea was they were going to pair the last 3 U.S. Open champions, which would include those two and Gary Woodland. And I thought Woodland said it best. He goes, I would have loved it. He goes, I would have actually egged him on, trying to get him to fight a little bit, because it's good for golf. Like, look, it's not probably what the PGA Tour would love to get eyeballs out, but, I mean, Gary brought it up. that Brooks Koepka has been all over the news the last 2 weeks, and he hasn't even played an event. And so if you're going to grow the game, if you're going to get more people interested, this is probably a pretty good way.
Oh, I think it's great. I personally love it myself. Like, how do you see it playing out when Brooks and Bryson are on the same Ryder Cup team? What about that dynamic?
They can keep them apart, and it will be interesting. I think Steve Stricker's probably got more in his hands than he wants in that particular situation, because you also have to factor in that Patrick Reed probably isn't the best person for the team room right now after what happened at the President's Cup at Royal Melbourne a few years ago, and of course what happened between he and Jordan Spieth about not being paired together. So Steve's got his hands full, but I always think it's a little entertaining that when we get to the Ryder Cup, everyone talks about how well the European team gets along. That's not true. They have plenty of guys that don't like each other. Padraig Harrington and Sergio Garcia never really liked each other. They were just able to figure it out that 1 week every 2 years. And I'm sure the U.S. can probably do the same thing, but it is something that Steve's going to have to be cognizant of.
Rex Hoggard is breaking down a lot of stuff for us. A couple of more moments with him. Rex, from a golf standpoint, what about Brooks? How did he look to you yesterday?
He's the kind of the Brooks that we all have come to expect, right? He looked like he was sort of hatched in a lab to contend at major championships. And it's just something about the pressure of this, the difficulty of this, whatever it is that the Grand Slam events bring out in him, that's what we saw yesterday. And I thought it was interesting the way he sort of changed the narrative. And the only way he was going to change this narrative between he and Bryson was to go out and play really, really well. And he's really good at that, and especially on a golf course like this that's going to separate those guys that might have the game but don't have the mental strength. And that's the difference when it comes to what Brooks is able to do and pretty much everyone else recently.
Hey, Rex, a couple of quick things before you go. I'm curious what your thoughts are on Rory McIlroy saying the other day that while he uses green reading books, he would like to see them banned. Like, how much do you think they help, and what's the argument for banning them?
I totally agree with Rory. The argument for banning it is reading greens is an art. It's an art form. It's something that you're learned. It's something that you're gifted with. And these books, not only do they slow down play, I think that's the first thing, but for those guys that do kind of have that ability, it does seem like it mitigates it. And I would say that the vast majority of tour players agree with Rory on this one.
All right, so it's early, but knowing the course, what kind of a number are you expecting to see the winner when it's all said and done?
I was a little surprised guys got to 4-under yesterday. That was a little bit lower than I thought because Tiger Woods won here at 1-under par. So I think anything around 5 or 6-under par, because it's only going to get faster, it's only going to get firmer and more difficult. So I think what we're going to do right now is probably a pretty good number.
Who do you like?
I look at him, Brooks Koepka. And again, for all the reasons that we just talked about, there's just a different gear that he seems to have, and he relishes this. And he's got that chip on his shoulder, which he seems to play his best golf when, you know, it seems like it's him against the world, and he can play with that.
I love it. He is golfchannels.com senior writer. He is Rex number 7. You want to follow him on Twitter at Rex Hoggard GC. And as I always mentioned, he is a good friend of the program. Rex, great job. Good to have you back. I appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Love being on. Thanks, Jim.
You too, Rex. Have a great weekend. My man always just shows up and nails it. All right, so he likes Brooks Koepka.